Recently, I was looking for something in my closet at home, and I saw a face from my past. I was rummaging through a box of pictures, and out fell a photograph of my friend David. He is the young man who played the organ at my parish of Fort Lauderdale 45 years ago. For 2 years, while I was there in that parish, we had a ball, making music that was variously bizarre, profound, unpredictable, and glorious. David drove a red Jaguar when it wasn't in the shop. He ate bagfuls of boiled shrimp, quaffed wheat germ straight at the organ bench, and had no better sense than to sight read Charles Ives' irreverent Variations on America on July 4th. The rector of the parish never knew what to do with David, so I was put in charge. Under his cassock, David normally wore tennis shorts, except in the winter when he added wool socks. He would stop by our house about 11:30 p.m. for a brief chat, and about 2:30 in the morning he would leave, reluctantly saying goodbye, after we had emptied two or three pots of coffee, arranged over everything from quantum mechanics to the new designs for cigarette boats to the Rolling Stones. David introduced my wife and me to a life and a world we didn't know existed. He took us to Alive and Well, a vegetarian restaurant in Lake Worth. We visited his condominium on Singer Island, where the doorman was a tattooed, deposed former Orthodox priest. One of David's friends, known to us only as Mao, used her PhD in Chinese history from Yale to work as a poodle clipper. Another friend, Leslie, guest conducted the choir one Easter wearing a tuxedo and a red satin-lined cape. Just finding the picture in my closet brought all of those weird and crazy people and the dazzling neurosis of David's life back. He was the youngest son of a real estate developer. Only 17 when his father died, David became a hustler and a con man of magnificent sweep. His mother and he were not very close. His best friend died alone in one wing of a huge seaside family home of a drug overdose. And with friends like Alec from Colombia, David must have lived farther on the edge than we could even have imagined. David was certainly not unique to Fort Lauderdale in the mid-1970s, I have to say. Our altar girl president would have drunk all the sacramental wine if we had not locked it in the safe. One member of the vestry was a bank president who was indicted for drug laundering. But David was our friend, and we loved him, and we cared about him, and tried to do whatever we could to get him straight. Very little worked. He turned down a chance to attend Harvard. Just when we thought we'd connected, he would spin out on some new adventure. He called us once from Lima, Peru. Collect. Needing money. But as soon as he allowed himself to move closer to us, he'd be spooked and fly away. Just before I left that parish, David was confirmed by the bishop. Then we moved to northern Wisconsin, Illinois, Litchfield, Connecticut, Buffalo, and finally to Wesley Chapel. Occasionally, David would connect, but always at his initiative. And our efforts to keep up generally hit a dead end. He came to visit us in Wisconsin once, and he hosted us for a week at the Breakers in Palm Beach. Then we lost contact. My wife especially tried to maintain contact, sending birthday cards for a few years until finally so little response came back that even she stopped trying. Then every few years David would call from wherever he was, South Carolina, San Francisco, Boston, telling us about the stupendous new parish he was playing the organ for and how their program had tripled since his arrival. By this time, we understood the scope of his grandiose self and we understood the enormous emptiness inside that kept him forever about to pull it together. So we'd talk and tell him about our family, and he'd promise to write, and we wouldn't hear from him for another 3 or 4 years. About 35 years ago, on the Saturday after All Saints Day, David called. He told us he was back at the church in Fort Lauderdale where we had known each other, having turned down 2 other amazing offers. They needed him, so he said, at this parish, and he hoped to help them rebuild their music program. He came back to his hometown, he said, to the place that was like paradise when he was growing up. What he didn't say was that he had come home. He was calling to tell us he was home, to let us know he was okay, to see if we were still there. After every other phone call from David, I felt sad or frustrated, you know, still wishing we could fix his life. But this call on the Saturday after All Saints left me feeling a kind of peace and a ripple of joy. Somehow, in the frenetic world of that congregation, half a block off the highway running from US 1 to the Atlantic Ocean, God had managed to draw even David into that world of blessed ones that make up the communion of saints. It's not clear at all how that happened. Perhaps it was the way we could pull off anything, like an All Saints liturgy where we hired 4 trumpeters and only 2 showed up along with a saxophonist. Perhaps in David's awkward attempt to say goodbye, when he told my lovely wife, only 30 at the time, that he hoped she would grow old gracefully. But she has. Perhaps in the 35 children in the children's choir, who saw nothing in the least strange about a choir director in tennis shorts with bagfuls of boiled shrimp. But for all his eccentricities, David was pure of heart. And according to the gospel, purity of heart is what counts. 20 years ago, David was killed in an auto accident. He was 44 years old, and surely was still trying to put it all together. My consolation amid my sorrow is that he is in a place where eccentricity is no bar to acceptance, and where purity of heart shines all over. This morning we celebrate the Feast of All Saints, so actually All Saints Day today. We remember all those behind us whose hearts were pure and whose faith shone like the sun. We will renew our own baptismal covenant shortly. We will remember our baptisms and give thanks for the grace of our baptismal blessing. Fortunately, most of us have not turned out like my friend David. And that's a blessing for us, because beneath his grandiose posturing, there was a sorrowful child whose father died and left him alone. Wherever we go throughout our lives, we wear the mantle of blessed. It is not a virtue of our own. It is the inheritance of our baptism and the grace and mercy of God. This baptismal font back there at the rear of the church is the paradise from which we all, at least in ancient memory, come. This is our home. Let our wandering away never be grieved, nor our dancing on the edge ever be mourned. Our great collective act of faith today is to believe, to know by faith, that wherever we go and whatever we do, we will cherish purity of heart, whatever it brings blessing to the world. We will remember our blessedness and return home.